Okay, well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Simon Ward. Thanks for joining us today. I'm joined by Alistair Brownlee. Hello, Alistair.
Hi, everyone.
This is the first edition of what Alistair and I are going to call Yorkshire Tri Talk. Now, if you don't know who Alistair is already, Alistair's our current world triathlon champion. He's made a successful comeback and start to his season this year by winning in Madrid last weekend. Now, tell us about that race, Alistair.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. You know, I haven't raced since winning the World Champs last year in September, so, and I'd had an injury in January, so I didn't really know what to expect. And you kind of go to Madrid, and a lot of people in, you know, press in the press conference said, you can't possibly see Alistair Brownlee finishing outside the top three. And I thought, I can see Alistair Brownlee finishing out the top three. All you need to do is run a bit slow, and that can happen. But the race went really well. I felt pretty good, and Madrid is a great course because it's really hard for me, a bit hilly, and went for it and got a bit, you know, of a lucky break towards the end of the bike and just managed to win it in a sprint, which is a novelty for me as well.
So how did Mr. Gomez take to get beaten on home soil there?
I think he'd been pretty injured as well, so I think he was there and just trying to get the best position he could, so I don't think he was too worried about being beaten by me. But yeah, I mean, Madrid's supposed to be his race, and yeah, I've won it twice in a row now, so it's been pretty good.
Do you think he'll be gunning for you on your home turf in a month's time?
Definitely, yeah. London's obviously the big Olympic race as well, so yeah, he'll definitely be chasing me down again.
Now, have they changed the rules a bit this year? So you can't actually retain your title now, can you?
Because no, it's a bit of a pain, really, to be honest. They basically said that one of the races had to be outside of Europe to count. So you got four series races and then the final. And last year I did four series races in the final. But some of those Aussies and New Zealanders complained, apparently, that it was unfair to Europeans, that there was too many European races. So they said it had to be one race that was outside of Europe to count in the four. And unfortunately, there's only been two races so far. Well, three now, but there was two that I didn't do. And they were both outside Europe and I was injured early in the year, so I couldn't do either of those, so I'm just concentrating on individual races now.
Just maybe give somebody else a chance for a year.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, we didn't come here to talk about all the serious stuff, did we?
Definitely not.
Our Yorkshire Tri Talk is going to be a slightly different look at the triathlon scene, and each time we do one of these podcasts, which might be every week or it might be once a month, we have been trying to get it together now for 6 months. We're going to take a little topic now. The first thing we came up today were little things that annoy us and wind us up about triathlon. And you and I have made a list here, Alistair. So let's start at the stop and see where we go. So you wrote down tri bars. So tell me what was going through your mind when you were.
Yeah, it's
one.
Not tri bars as such. You know, they're a pretty good idea, but you just see them when they're really badly used. I think that's the big thing. You know, you see someone on a really old rubbishy bike or a mountain bike, that's the worst thing.
Yeah.
With tri bars that are about 5 or 6 inches above the handlebars, and then they're not even using them, they're just sat on the bar, you know, the normal bars anyway, so I think it's badly used tri bars is there.
Well, what about when you see people with really expensive bikes that just, you know, they spent $5,000, they've bought the zip wheels, they've got the top end carbon fibre, they've got the new Shimano electronic gear shift, and then they've got a pair of handlebars that aren't fitted right.
Yeah.
So they might as well be sitting on one of those mountain bikes
definitely.
You just mentioned for all the use they're doing.
That's another point, yeah.
You know, the extra 50 quid could have really set them up.
Yeah, well, especially in kind of non-drafting races, it's all, you know, the most important thing is really position and that you're comfortable in that, and then it's, you know, pretty aerodynamic. And yeah, it's crazy when you see someone riding a, you know, an expensive whatever light speed round and they're set up bolt upright and not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, on that matter actually about being aerodynamic, let's say you have got your tri bars all sorted out, but then the kit you've bought is all baggy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember going to a race, Jack and I were there, and we were walking along, it'd been raining a bit, so a few people were wearing the rain jackets. But this one guy got his jacket and it was open, so it was flapping in the wind like Batman's cape.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking, how much drag was that causing? It was an ASOS cape, so, I mean, it was a nice expensive one. But, you know, he wasn't getting any aero benefit from all of that good kit.
Yeah, that's the other thing, of course, yeah. The kit that you're wearing and the helmets are another pretty important thing, you know. I think a good helmet can save you a fair few watts, an aero helmet, and make sure it's on your head in the right position as well. That's
you don't want to have the peak pointing forward so you look like a seagull. But, you see, that's... on a serious note, I when I went to Hawaii a couple of years ago, I was talking to the guys who were doing Faris Al Sultan's bike, and he had a power meter, which we'll talk about power meters later. But he had an SRM, but he had all the little computer taped up. And I'd asked what was the point of having it, and he said, "Well, if he has the screen there, he's going to look at it, and when he looks at it, he's got to tilt his head forward, so his aero helmet points up, so it's like a shark spin, so he's not getting any benefit, so he prefers not to look at it, but he has to have it there for the sponsors.
So
I would think that a fair few age groupers have their Garmins and all these other little gadgets that wanting to look at them, see how fast they're going, but they've spent £200 on an aero helmet and are not getting any benefit.
Yeah, by the time they've looked down and the speed goes right down, it's a waste of time.
Yeah, okay, so talking about helmets then, the next thing you've written is visors. Has that got something to do with helmets?
Visors, running visors, I think they're the most pointless things ever. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of wearing anything on my head. Not a big fan of wearing hats as such. But I just think visors are just, why people wear them to keep the sun out of their eyes, I think, don't they? But yeah, I've never been a fan.
Well, I can tell you, Alistair, with a lack of hair like I've got, I mean, albeit voluntarily, having a white hat on does sometimes stop you from getting sunburned, but I certainly wouldn't wear a visor because that's going to stop the sun getting in my eyes, and then I'll end up with heatstroke. I'll be in the medical tent, either with heatstroke or sun blindness. Anyway, isn't that what sunglasses are for?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. Supposed to keep the sun out of your eyes. But I don't know, you see people running around with visors, don't you? And no sunglasses, I don't know what the point in them is.
No, me neither. So that's part two of our pet hate then. If you're going to have a visor, you've got to have a really good look. If somebody's paying you to wear it, then that's good, isn't it?
Fair enough.
Your sponsors are giving you them.
But even, if they could pay you to wear a hat instead, it have to be a visor.
Well, you get more yardage on there, more sponsors' names, more coverage, wouldn't you? Now, I saw this one, shortcut questions. I thought, surely you can't mean people asking what shortcuts there are on a race. How do I miss out the last 10k of the run?
It's happened.
But I think I've got a good idea, because I think I get asked these too. So tell me about your shortcut questions.
I think, the one biggest thing I get asked, when I do media things or people come and ask me, not in the street, because you never get asked a triathlon question in the street, but, when you're around the kind of triathlon event is, how do you do it? What's your training secrets? Have you got any top tips? And what shortcuts? And then what they're all asking really is, what's the shortcut? How can I get as quick as possible, as fast as possible? And of course, everyone knows really there isn't a shortcut.
Jack and I get asked exactly the same questions. What's the quickest way to get our swim time down? And it's, you just got to get swimming. Quickest way to get started is to get started. We were talking earlier last year when I was in America, and you just won the world title. A lot of the American guys are going like, where's this Brownie boy come from? He's just come from nowhere. And I'm like, no, do your research, man. He's been there. And we've known you since you were 14, 15, and Jonathan, so I can tell everybody that you've been doing this stuff since you were since you were in your early teens.
Yeah, and there's that old saying, isn't there, that it took me a long time to become an overnight success.
That's right.
And I think nothing is quite as simple as it seems, and unfortunately there isn't any shortcuts in sport, I don't think.
But it's about consistency of training. You've been doing this stuff 7 days a week since you were 12.
Exactly.
That's a massive base, isn't it?
And that's the shortcut.
And until recently, you've had very few injuries, so you've been able to just stack up year upon year of training.
Yeah, definitely.
Those are the secrets to shortcuts.
Consistency.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's. I'm going to move down there, because while we're on training, we've got one here about not maximising your training time. Now, this is probably more important to age groupers, but then I guess they're going to make up the majority of people who listen to this.
And it's linking into shortcut as well.
It is.
So obviously we just talked about consistency, and it's about maximising training all the time.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that really winds me up as a coach is when we've only got an hour in the swimming pool or an hour on the track. So you get your athletes there, but they don't maximise the time beforehand to be warming up and preparing themselves. They don't do a dry land warm-up. And then as soon as we get the opportunity to get the session started, quite a lot of them are still chattering. They haven't got the goggles on, they're not waiting while the others get out of the pool.
I witness that every Wednesday morning, don't I?
You do, yeah. I can see you and Johnny smirking while I'm shouting at them.
Yeah, all these poor people come here on a Wednesday morning and pay to get shouted at like the school kids again.
Well,
but yeah, it is a good point. I mean, it's not a massive thing for me, but even, the way I train, you've only got set swimming times, and you've got a pool booked for an hour and a quarter, hour and a half, so you want to make the most of that time, and You know, you don't go to the pool for a chat, do you? You know, you go to the pool to swim, so...
You have breakfast to have a chat,
exactly,
don't you?
Which is what we do. You do that afterwards, so... Yeah, you don't stand around on the side of the pool chatting, so you want to get in and, you know, get on with your session, really, and get it done.
Yeah, and I guess, as you say, that it's more important in the pool, because you tend to be restricted there, but, you know, if you think you've got an hour, you miss 3 minutes of your training time.
Yeah, it's quite significant.
That's 5%. Yeah. Now, remember last year we were talking about what made the difference between the Olympic year and your winning last year?
Yeah.
Were those little one percenters.
Exactly, yeah.
Well,
if missed 3% off every session for a year, that's a lot of training.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so maximising training time, that's a real one. You know, if this was like that, do you remember that TV programme, Room 101, where they used to have to put stuff into the bin? All these would be going into our bin, wouldn't they?
Yeah, definitely.
We need to have, I tell you what we need to do next time, we need to have a klaxon, so it's been consigned to some sort of awful place. Which is probably where these next ones should be consigned to then.
Definitely.
Triathlon running shoes.
Oh, you see some absolute shocking designs, don't you? I mean, you can see there's a Pacific market and there's a lot of triathletes out there who want to buy a Pacific kit, but you just look at them and think, I don't think I've actually seen a tri shoe specifically designed for triathlon that's actually, you know, particularly well designed. They're designed to get on fast, but often they're, you know, kind of all-in-one kind of designs are absolutely awful. They're worse to get on than normal trainers.
I saw one last year in Kona, and it has like, it's like a slip-on.
Yeah, they're even harder to get on.
Is it Scott or somebody who were doing them?
Possibly, yeah.
And it's like a slip-on, and as you put your foot, you slid your foot in, then you just pull this strap around the back, but there's no support there at all.
Yeah, and often the straps go half up your calf as well, so all sorts of rubbing can go on.
And actually, if it comes undone, it's just like trying to run in a pair of flip-flops, so how much time are you going to lose on those?
I think they're actually, you know, they're often really badly thought out, they've got really bad support, the soles are often rubbish as well, and they usually look awful as well.
Well, I remember testing a pair of shoes by a well-known manufacturer that we won't mention, but it was through one of the triathlon magazines, and these were called, well, they were supposed to make you run like a gazelle, but I tell you what, at 75 kilos I felt like a bloody elephant. They didn't make me run like a gazelle, and I could see a lot of people buying these shoes that they really don't suit. So, you know, you see the advertising, somebody goes into the shop, they buy them because they're the most expensive or they look funky, but then they're totally unsuitable to that runner.
Yeah, definitely. On a serious note, I think running shoes can have a massive impact on, you know, I wear a brand of shoes and they kind of change part of the shoe and I carry on ordering the same shoe, and they put a kind of a insole thing on the inside of it, and so it changes the shoe, and that, you know, possibly could be a cause of the injury that I've had. So, you know, it's a serious thing, and definitely, you know, it's definitely worth trying different shoes, seeing what's comfortable and seeing what fits you and, you know, fits your running style.
Yeah. Have you read that book, Born to Run?
Yeah, I've actually, yeah.
In there, it's because if you haven't read it yet, I'll do this on another blog. It's a fantastic book. It's a really good, what you think is a novel, but it's a really good story, but there's a lot of sort of scientific stuff in there as well. But in there, he talks about how the track runners were given all these sponsored shoes and they kept getting injured, so they were doing the barefoot stuff. And he said in there are quite a few references to the fact that you just should get the cheapest running shoes that fit you, because they've got the least amount of sort of gizmos and gadgets on them.
I think the problem is I think when you start running in shoes and maybe orthotics and all sorts, you become a bit reliant on them, and then it's very difficult to go back to basics. So I think if you can start off at basics, perfect, but I think if you kind of come away from basics and become reliant on lots of cushion and orthotics or whatever, then it's difficult to go back.
Yeah. So I'll try running shoes then. I'll tell you what, Alistair, we could go on for days with some of this stuff. We might have to make another podcast. Race briefings, I'm sure I've been to a few of them. I reckon.
Are they all the same?
They are all the same, I'm sure. How many races do you reckon you've done in your career now?
I don't know. I'd do at least 10, 12 at least a year, so you know,
probably 100.
Yeah,
and I've probably in 20 years I've probably sat through at least that many, probably double. So what are your views on race briefings then, without upsetting the race directors who might be listening?
Yeah, I know. Well, unfortunately ITU ones, they always start off with giving you all the officials' names, and it's like you said, I don't care what the officials' names are, you know what I mean? And every time, you know, it's going to be 8 laps on a bike, or 2 laps swimming, and a 4 lap run. It's always the same. And so they're going around, and you know where the course is because you've been around it before. And it's just, you're sitting there thinking, I'm wasting my time. And even normally, you've been to the race the year before, and you've been around the course, and you know the course better than the people who are telling you about it. So
we used to when I used to run fitness training classes, we used to do briefings every week, which was like a health and safety thing and a medical thing. But what we used to do was say, look, if anybody's been to this class before, you can start warming up.
Yeah.
So they could, and then any new people, so they could say, right, if you've done this race before, you can go.
Yeah,
they just any new pros, you have to stay, so they just get the small group of people that have never done it before.
And in international racing, it's even more annoying than that, because they have to be, for all sorts of reasons that I don't actually know about, they have to be 2 days before your race, or 2 days before the first race. So, for example, last weekend they decided to split the men's race and the women's race. So the women's race was on Saturday, the men's race was on Sunday, and the briefing has to be 2 days before the first event. So that means you have to be there on Thursday, when you know, normally you could fly in Thursday, Saturday.
And the girls don't have to get there till Friday.
Well, no, the girls can be there. No, because it has to be 2 days before the first event. So.
Oh, okay, Yeah, and do you like, when we go to the Ironman events, of course, because there's so many nationalities there, they've got the German briefing, and then they've got the French briefing.
Oh, no, they do it all in English, so it'll be even worse for the foreigners, because they can't understand it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's. I remember going to Ironman Germany, and they started talking about, because the swim was outside of, it was a split transition, so the swim was out of about 15k out of town, and they'd got this, the Intercontinental Hotel in Frankfurt was where the race was based, so they were telling you about all these buses, and they started talking about the red bus will go here, and although they were talking about the buses, and so one of my friends was so sick of it, he put his hand up, and in all seriousness, he goes, can you tell me if it will be a red bus or a green bus that we need to get on? You know, and of course, typical Germans, they just didn't see the funny side of it. All the Brits were laughing their heads off.
They all get really official and really, really boring at the end of it.
Yeah. But then there's always somebody who doesn't go to the briefing that goes wrong, of course. Yeah, so, we're not condoning that you don't go to the briefings, by the way.
Yeah.
Just that perhaps race directors, if you are listening, could think of a smarter way of doing the delivering.
And in ITU, actually, you have to turn up if you... it's never actually happened to me, but apparently if you're late to the briefing, it's like after 5 or 10 minutes, you get docked 10 places on the start. So, like, say if you ranked 35th, you become 45th, so you go onto the pontoon 45th, so you don't get as good selection as your spot.
Okay.
And if you miss the briefing altogether, you get put right at the back, so you're last one on the pontoon.
So it's a bit like the Formula One thing, where you get to the back of the grid.
Exactly, it's just like that, yeah.
They should maybe do that, you know, whereas you have to have pre-qualifying.
Yeah,
and then if you have to change your wheel or change your bike, you have to start from the back of the grid. I was just going to say, in one of the briefings at Ironman Canada, it was supposed to be a mandatory briefing, and so they gave you all these in the race bag that you get when you register. You get all these little cards, and when you went down there, they had it all fenced off, and they had people on the gate, and you had to hand your card in. They tick your name off. I'm not sure if I know a couple of people who never went and they still started the race, but you know, I think they just did it to maximise the number of people in there.
Yeah. Now all like international IT races are mandatory briefings. It's big trouble if you don't turn up.
Do they know then? Do they check a register when you get
there? Oh yeah, you get ticked in, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, literally if you turn up late, you can get sanctions for turning up late and all sorts. Yeah.
Right, wow. Well, maybe that would make things interesting, a bit more interesting. You can sort of see Gomez, you know, you could hide his shoes or something and see him start. He could have to be penalised a 10-minute start, so he had to swing on his
tyres down on his bikes.
Yeah. So what about body numbers? You've got body numbers down there. You've obviously have to have body marking.
Yeah, I think in almost all racing now, electronic timing is almost the norm, isn't it? You know, across from Ironman, Olympic distance racing, age group racing, everything. So I just don't really see what the need of them is, to be honest with you.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that, you know, it takes ages to get off.
Exactly,
and if you've been somewhere hot, you end up with the number 6 tattooed on your leg,
exactly,
don't you, for weeks?
I've got some on my arms right now.
Yeah.
But, it's more for age group racing now internationally and elite racing. I think you have to have names on your suits. You definitely do for elite, and I think you do for age group. So
yeah,
I just think it's unnecessary to have, you know, everything going on.
So you've got your name.
Yeah,
you've got your tag from the security company, so you can't leave.
Yeah.
Mind you, that numbering on the that letter, you know, the names on the on the suits. Yeah, I've got a couple of funny stories about that. When we were doing Ironman Switzerland a few years ago, I was having a bad time on the last lap of the bike, and there's a quite a long climb. It actually goes up to that Dignitas place, you know, the place where they go for the assisted suicides.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realise until recently that the top of the climb is actually where this place is based.
Probably a good job you didn't know.
I was going to say, if I'd known at the time, I might have stopped in. But as I was having a bad time on the last lap, it was really hot and I'd sort of not drunk enough. And I got passed by Jesus. And that was when I thought it was really getting bad. In the you know, Fiona's surname is Hoare.
Yeah.
So obviously it's spelled H-O-A-R-E, but she was running along, and I think in Ironman Canada they have your Christian name on the front and your surname on the back, and somebody had seen it, and they were just about to shout, "Go on, Hoare! Yeah. Go on! Oh no! Go on, 4268!"
So, well, we enjoy obviously race a lot, and we've got the same name, so you don't have to have your first name on it. Also, apparently, everyone's saying no one knows who we are, the individual ones. So
yeah, it's difficult to tell you apart, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it isn't. Oh, I think we've got a minute left. 50
okay,
seconds.
I think. Well, I think I'll tell you what we'll do, Alistair. We'll stop here, right, and then we'll start podcast 2.
All right. Okay.
Okay.